Money is a reflection of how you treat yourself. What is important to you? How do you feel about it? Adopt a positive, confident mindset. Do. Educate yourself. Write a budget. Work out how long your money will last. Be smart with your money. Write a savings and investment plan. Build a team. Update your essential documents. Take action right now. Remind yourself that financial planning is the ultimate act of self-care. Chapter 7. Your home. Look at your home with new eyes. Decoration ideas. Key rooms. Practicalities. I'm sitting at my kitchen table, listening to the Sydney rain, and I am content. I love being at home. I have always been a strong believer that your surroundings have a profound impact on your well-being, and that is multiplied 100-fold when you live by yourself. It's not about how your home compares to the glossy spreads in an interiors magazine, or if you have a feature wall. Your home embodies who you are and how you see yourself, how you spend time within its walls, and how you care, nourish, wash, and entertain yourself. As you get used to living with yourself, not by yourself, you discover a whole world is enclosed in the word home. One of the many gifts of living alone is the possibility of getting to know and design our homes intimately and intricately. I know exactly where and how the light falls at different times of day and can judge from the sound on the roof how hard the rain is falling. I know my home's creaks and foibles, and at night I can feel it breathe. Naturally, you want other people to like your place when they visit, but your focus shouldn't be on them. It's all about you, and how freeing is that? Your home is a statement about you, another litmus test of self-esteem, but even more, it is a statement to you. It becomes as much an idea as a physical thing. Your nest, your sanctuary, your rallying cry, your corner of the universe, your sounding board, therapy, and a constant partner in transformation. The 4th century hermit Abba Moses said, "Go sit in your cell, and your cell will teach you everything." Maybe our homes can teach us too. Being at home alone isn't a last resort. You are somewhere, your place, and you are with someone who matters, you. A starting point. Find a quiet spot in your home and sit for 10 minutes soaking up the atmosphere. Can you feel its energy? Is it positive or negative? If it's positive, that's great. If it's negative, you can change that straight away by laughing out loud, meditating, or smudging with a sage stick. Don't dismiss this as bullshit. It works. Think about how you want to feel in your home. You'll want different things at different times, but what are the most important? To feel safe, comfortable, happy, energized, calm, restored, busy, loved, content, relaxed, productive, comforted, transformed, inspired, nurtured, at ease, or at peace. Choose what are the most important to you. Hopefully they will align with the atmosphere in your home. If not, consider what you can change. Location, location, location. Does where you live, city, country, or suburbia, allow you to live the way you want to? Budget, proximity to work, family, friends, and lifestyle are the basic criteria. After that, we have 3 choices: city, country, or suburbia. The city has the advantage of varied activities at your fingertips and sheer numbers of people, but sometimes it can give you less of a connection to neighbours or community. In the country, the community tends to be closer, with people looking out for one another, but you could also be potentially isolated and have fewer opportunities to meet new people, and everyone knows your business. For many single people living alone, suburbia can be a no-man's land of happy families. But it's horses for courses, and you will know what is feasible and right for you. Don't get stuck in a rut. You can always move. The same goes for size. Obviously, we all have financial constraints, but is the size of your home right for how you live? If you don't entertain often, do you need the space for a dining table or separate eating area? If you work from home, Are you happy to work in your kitchen, as I do, or bedroom, or do you need extra space to write or create? A good friend rented a particular house specifically so that she could use the garage as her studio. I have many divorced and widowed friends who have been forced to downsize, but they don't care, because the opportunity to express themselves anew outweighs the fact that the washing machine and dryer are stacked in the bathroom and they need point ballet shoes to get around without knocking things over. One woman described the sensation of having her own space as a whole house full of fresh air. Another friend painted every floor white just because she could. The point is that most of us can decide where we live, so make it somewhere you want to be, in a size that works for you. Don't be afraid to move. Of course it's nerve-wracking, but for many women it has provided exactly the boost they need to kickstart a new stage of their life. Your house is your larger body. It grows in the sun and sleeps in the stillness of the night. And it is not dreamless. Kahil Gibran. Welcome to my home. It's not just a change of location that offers an end to stagnation. Simply changing something in your home can have the same effect. Look at your home with fresh eyes. What do you see? Imagine you are doing a tour of your home for a TV show or YouTube video. Make a quick video of yourself presenting on your phone and try it out. Here I am in my kitchen with everything at hand. This is where I write my emails, and here is my reading seat, my cozy bedroom, and so on. Which bits are you proudest of? Which bits work, and which parts do you gloss over? The overstacked shelves you've been meaning to go through. The chipped paint you've been meaning to fix. The ugly chair you've been meaning to replace, bulging wardrobes, paperwork covering every surface. Think about how you would like the space to look and superimpose it on the space you live in now, a mental before and after. Sometimes it's minor tweaks, sometimes it's a bit more involved. But this is not about hiring a fancy decorator or a big renovation. The smallest adjustments can have a huge impact. Change gives you energy. But make sure it is a reflection of you, not a standard taupe cookie-cutter nightmare from a TV renovation reality show. How do you use your space? Your home should fit around you and your needs, not the other way around. How do you use your home? Of course it's your sanctuary, but it is also a place to have friends over, and possibly work in too. It's worth weighing up the different parts of your life to see if your home dovetails and delivers. For example, one friend with a very stressful job relies purely on her home to recharge her, so she boldly transformed the second bedroom into a breathtaking Balinese-inspired bathroom. Good for resale value? Possibly not. Nourishing for her soul? Absolutely. Another friend who works from home simply moved her desk into a spot with more natural light and invested in a proper work chair, shelving and desk lamp. Huge improvement. If you enjoy cooking, how can you optimize your kitchen space? If you are lucky enough to love your home exactly the way it is, you feel it fits you like a custom pair of Christian Louboutins, then skip the next few paragraphs. But if not, stay with me. Find your home's desire paths. Shape your home around the way you live by identifying its desire paths. A desire path in urban planning is a path created by pedestrians as a common sense shortcut to avoid the longer route on the tarmacked footpath. We all know a few. According to Wikipedia, in Finland, planners are known to visit their parks immediately after the first snowfall when the existing paths are not visible. People naturally choose desire paths, clearly marked by their footprints, which can then be used to guide the routing of new purpose-built paths. Brilliant. Think about the desire paths in your house. What are the things that can be moved or changed to be close at hand and make your life easier? Line up your morning routine essentials on the right-hand side of the bathroom basin if you're right-handed, or put your go-to recipes in a separate folder, or rejig the cutlery drawer so that your favorite knives, forks, and spoons are in a separate slot. Untangle and organize your charging cords. If your reading chair needs a footstool, a throw, or better lighting, see to it. Inspiration for decoration. Even if you don't intend to change the decor of your home, it's worth trawling for inspiration, even if it's just for a couple of small ideas. You can follow your nose or articulate the style you're after. Would it be comfortable, functional, stylish, minimalist, eclectic, vintage, beautiful, unusual, quirky, homely, inspired, unique, individual, modest, simple, traditional, graceful, creative, mellow, or atmospheric? Then hop on the internet, look at Pinterest or Houzz or one of the many other home decor sites, and use the search function to narrow it down, making pin boards as you go. Sooner or later, you'll find someone posting who has a similar vibe to you, and before you know it, you'll have an inspirational board with loads of ideas. Or buy just one interiors magazine and look at it imaginatively, stealing a few small details, like using a trophy as a vase, or leaning pictures in front of books on your bookshelf. Choosing colors. Living alone allows you the opportunity to explore your creative side in many different ways, and choosing the color of your walls is one of them. I'm not advocating every room should be a different color, nearly all of mine are white, but a dash of color goes a long way. You might think you don't know where to start, but you do. Looking back at your Pinterest boards, do certain colors keep appearing? Buy a color swatch from a smaller paint company where someone with a trained eye has curated a collection, such as Porter's Paints. The smaller selection makes decision-making much easier. You are instinctively drawn to certain colors. Walk around your house and pinpoint the colors of the things you love. A favorite outfit, a vase, a bowl, a painting, or a cushion. For perfect color combinations, look to nature. Books of birds, butterflies, and fish will reveal incredible juxtapositions of colors that are just perfect. The shot of yellow in the pristine white of a sulfur-crested cockatoo, or the pink, black, and white of a turtle dove, or the hues of a blue swimmer crab. Go for a walk and really look at things. Rust on a gate, the weathered wood of an old door, the colors of an old shop sign, or oil in a puddle. Take photos. Ah, there is nothing like staying at home for real comfort. Jane Austen, Emma. After a while, you'll notice that you are drawn to the same colors or combinations. For me, it's white and the palest blue, which ended up being the color of my bedroom ceiling. Every day when I wake up, I love it. Some good interiors websites. Pinterest.com, Houzz.com, ElementsILove.com, GrageDesign.com, MissMustardSeed.com, FunkyJunkInteriors.net, InspiredBarn.com, MySweetSavannahBlog.com, SurfaceView.co.uk, IdealHome.co.uk. A few ideas from my scrapbooks. Look carefully at what possessions you already have and think about ways to rearrange them into different groups and combinations. It's more about mergers than acquisitions. Have flowers on your bedside table. The vase can be anything that holds water, such as a beautiful tin can, a cup and saucer, or an old milk jug. Bring outdoor garden statues inside. There are often amazing bargains in garden centers. Then Google how to give them a patina. Create collections of objects, vases, hats, baskets, the boards from old board games, and so on. Paint writing on the wall. A favorite phrase printed out, traced, and painted looks wonderful and unique. Wallpaper one wall. Some of the wallpapers available now are truly beautiful. Look on Pinterest for inspiration. Narrow the results in the search, e.g. wallpaper with birds. Go to your local flea market and wait to be drawn to something with a bit of patina that tells a story. Arrange fruit and veg in bowls on the table instead of flowers when you're having friends over. Hide something in each room that makes you smile. An old, loved teddy bear hidden among your clothes, a photo of you with a friend inside a cupboard door, a tiny butterfly watercolored on the wall behind a curtain, favorite postcards stuck inside your wardrobe doors, or beautiful paper lining your clothing drawers. Have flowers and plants in interesting pots. Outside, I have cheated and incorporated fake ones from IKEA that look great. Print out photos of trips and frame them, or make them into collages with tickets, maps, and keepsakes. Surround yourself with pictures of people who love you. Order letterhead writing paper or cards printed with your address. These also make a fantastic gift. He is happiest, be he king or peasant, who finds peace in his home. Goethe. Key rooms. Which rooms do you want to prioritize? Tidy them up one at a time. It is so much more satisfying to have one room finished than several half-finished. Multitasking is a myth. Your entrance, your bedroom, your living room, your kitchen, your bathroom. The home should be the treasure chest of living. Le Corbusier. Your entrance. Oprah nailed it when she said your home should rise up to greet you. More often than not, you'll be coming home alone, so put some thought into the entrance of your home to make sure it welcomes you. Are you happy with the lighting, door knocker, handle, bell, and mat? I found a beautiful old metal door knocker of a hand holding a ball in a junk shop in Tunisia, and I love it. Or how about a metal sign or mat saying welcome with a plant by the door? Small touches, but they all add up. Think about the color of your door. If you're allowed to paint it, i.e. you're not renting or in an apartment block, make sure you paint it a color you love. There are plenty of apps and digital programs where you can try out different colors superimposed on a photograph of your place. I have a fire engine red door, chosen by my daughter, and it lifts my spirits every day. I also have a small tree in a pot by the entrance. In your hallway, think about having a light on a timer switch so that you always come home to brightness. Hang photos of friends and family to welcome you in, along with a slim table or shelf for keys and post and a flower and a vase. You deserve to have your spirits lifted as you enter. To avoid any something about Mary moments, hang a mirror so that you can double check before you go out to catch the spinach in your teeth or the blob of yogurt on your chin. Your bedroom. Your private HQ and base camp. Another area of privacy, retreat, and sanctuary. It's the most personal space in your home and the place to recharge your batteries. Start with your bed. Know his or her side of the bed? It's all yours, baby. Bliss on a stick. As for Shakespeare famously leaving his wife his second best bed in his will, pah! Get the best bed you can afford. One friend has just bought the four-poster she always wanted. Like your sofa, it's worth the investment and you'll never regret the outlay. I think of my bed as an oasis, a big, soft, white, snowy, feathery island of retreat. I say retreat. Some nights I just keel over like a piece of old timber. The same principle of investment goes for sheets, duna covers, pillowcases, blankets, and throws. Look online to find your favorites and wait till they go on sale. I only have white linens, which I adore. For hotel luxury, consider a mattress topper, mattress pad or feather bed that goes over your mattress. In summer, I sleep under a very patched old soft linen sheet that belonged to my mother, topped off with a cotton knit blanket. When I remember, I use a lovely citrus linen spray when they're hanging on the washing line. In winter, I heat the bed with an electric blanket and snuggle up with a couple of those velvety plush throws on top. It's like sleeping under a prone teddy bear. Sleep on the pillows of a millionaire. If you're going to spend a third of your life with your face pressed against it, make sure you love it. Invest in the very best. It's a relatively small outlay for a huge payback. Check out hotel websites where they might sell their bedding. In theory, if you sleep on your side, you should have a firm pillow. If you sleep on your back, a medium pillow. And if you're a front-down sleeper, you should opt for a soft pillow. Hunt around, choose what you want, but make sure you love it. It's a nice idea to assign your day an adjective as your feet touch the floor when you first get out of bed. Calm, productive, energetic, and so on. For a bit of added luxury, place a small rug beside your bed that is warm on your feet in winter and cool in summer, just like they do in really good hotels. If it's good enough for the Ritz, it's good enough for me. Some people sleep with their pets on the bed. I don't. Rory, my dog, sleeps at the foot of my bed on the floor. He's not allowed on the bed or sofa at all. My space. Although I know that sometimes when I'm not here, he sneaks up and writhes around on my bed in bliss like an overacting porn star. Muddy footprints provide the evidence. Dogs snore and fart. Who knew? Not me. I thought I'd done with that, but my ex's nightly snoring has been replaced by Rory's fortissimo canine rumbles. Home interprets heaven. Home is heaven for beginners. Charles Henry Parkhurst. Have a full-length mirror in your bedroom for a final check before you go out. It's a better option having the bus driver tell you your dress is in your knickers or your shirt buttons are done up wonkily. I've lost track of the times I've got dressed in the dark and sallied forth with clothes inside out or wearing one black and one blue shoe. Search online again for inspirational ways to make your bedroom more special. Make sure the bedside table is clear of clutter, but big enough to hold a good reading light, water bottle, book, tissues, candle, notebook and pen, your journal, picture frame, flowers, torch, whatever you want and need. I have two clocks, one on each bedside table, so that I don't have to turn over in the middle of the night to find out the time. A good example of a desire path in action. I have a tiny ceramic angel that a friend gave me, and a welcoming string of battery-powered mini fairy lights on a copper wire around the antique French shutters that serve as my bedhead. The last thing you see at night and the first thing you wake up to should be positive and life-affirming. One strip of wall in my bedroom is covered in kainite, like pinboard, to provide a constantly changing vision board. I've installed narrow shelves by my bed, which are full of framed photos of family, friends, and favorite places. It is comforting to know that on the nights I lie awake worrying, on nights so dark I feel surrounded by black velvet, they are watching over me. It's nice to perform a little ritual at night, maybe spray your pillow with scent. My top three are Jo Malone's Lime, Basil and Mandarin Cologne, Eau de Rocha, and L'Eau d'Adrienne by Anouk Guttal. Listen to some music, flick on a flameless candle, read a few pages of a book, and contemplate the day just gone. I don't have much of a view from my bedroom. I look over the row of terraced houses opposite. But sometimes the sky is a beautiful colour, or I'll have a guest appearance from a cockatoo. I like to capture the same view in different seasons at different times of day. My personal view. Run a home like you would a small business, and treat it with the same seriousness. Anthea Turner. Your living room. Invest in a sofa you love. It is a key piece, so try not to compromise. Dress it up with eclectic cushions, and, if you're handy with a sewing machine, make some more from material you like, or embroider your name or a phrase that's meaningful for you. Write it freehand, then go over it in cable stitch. YouTube it. Etsy also has some great cushions. I also have a velvety soft throw that I cuddle up in, and a lightweight cotton one for summer, plus a good reading lamp so that there's always a cozy place to read. In terms of knickknacks and paintings, only have what pleases you. It is lovely to own things that are handmade. It could just be a simple bowl, or a sketch done by a student at your nearest art college. Go to the final shows and snap up a bargain. It is just something unique to you and your home. You have the opportunity to surround yourself with things that appeal to you on a visceral level. If you have ever been to a body talk session, you will know that your body instinctively reacts in a certain way. It is drawn to some things and pulls back from others. Surround yourself with things that you're drawn to. One friend, for example, is drawn to wabi-sabi, a Japanese decorative philosophy based on small pleasures, which honors the handcrafted in all its imperfections. Matsuo Basho, the poet, combined the words wabi, lonely, and sabi, rust, to explain the taste for the simple and the quiet. Look at things piece by piece and weigh up if they've earned a place in your home. Also, and stay with me on this one. Think about ditching your TV altogether. I do understand that some people see it as company and like the sound of it in the background to fill the silence. But it can be such a time thief and is becoming more and more redundant in the age of Netflix and playback TV on a laptop. I'm not suggesting you become a Trappist nun and eschew technology altogether, but with a laptop you aren't tied to the sofa. You can watch in bed or while you're cooking. For this reason, I'm also a big fan of radio. With the internet, you can now listen to radio stations and podcasts from all over the world. Music can also play an important role in your home. It's useful to have a good quality portable Bluetooth speaker that you can move from room to room. And it's even better if you keep finding new music that rocks your boat. Ask your friends and look on the internet. Then make playlists for all your different moods. Put all your CDs on your computer and then back it up. And don't just limit yourself to music. Some of my favorite tracks include The Sound of Rainfall and Korean Monks Chanting. Once you've set it up, you can have the same song on repeat until your ears bleed and there's no one to complain. A house is not a home unless it contains food and fire for the mind as well as the body. Benjamin Franklin. Your kitchen. What goes on in your kitchen has a direct correlation to your self-worth, but it's an easy place to let things slip. After all, who's to know, right? Letting the dirty dishes pile up, ignoring a spill on the floor, eating standing up from a takeaway container with a spork, and not clearing out the freezer or taking the rubbish out as often as you should? Sounds familiar? Along with the bathroom, this room has to be spotlessly operating theatre clean. Each of us has a line in the sand that, if crossed, means we've gone too far. For me, that's leaving the washing up. I feel that if that slips, my whole house will look like the aftermath of a sorority party or a hoarder's paradise. As I mentioned earlier, I look forward to the ritual of eating by myself in the evening. Because I also work at my small square kitchen table, I mark the end of the working day by putting a tablecloth on it, or just a nice vintage linen tea towel, lighting a candle, and setting a place, complete with a table napkin in a silver ring. Small effort, big reward. I have a selection of homemade tablecloths, one made from old tea towels stitched together, another just a hemmed length of material that caught my eye. They sit folded in a basket, ready to go. If you are lucky enough to own nice china and cutlery, use them every day. If not, buy a setting just for you. In the past few years, I've picked up odd pieces of tableware, ranging from bowls beautifully decorated with fish and octopuses, or is that octopi, to divided bento plates from Muji, to a thin and beautiful aubergine-coloured noodle bowl from Mud, to a salad plate shaped like a lettuce leaf, and lots of blue and white plates and bowls from Chinatown and Japanese shops, and blue and white enamel falconware, and mini wooden chopping boards on which I plonk my food a la Jamie Oliver. I just love them. The same goes for glasses, which I pick up, one at a time, from charity, junk, and antique shops. As orphans, they're not expensive. This is about the only time when buying for one is a bargain. Take a step back for a minute, literally. Are you happy with the way your kitchen looks? Just because it's a kitchen doesn't mean it can't have paintings, although nothing valuable, of course, because of the grease from cooking, or photographs of your favourite faces and places. If you spend a lot of time in your kitchen, as I do, it is worth putting in a proportionate amount of thought as to how it looks and feels. When I have a few friends over, everyone ends up sitting on high stools in the kitchen and chatting as I cook, or eating at the little table. I have a couple of big pin boards covered in tickets, photos, cards, letters, vintage price labels bought on eBay, paper fans and dragons from Chinatown. They provide great conversation starters. I also have framed collages of photographs from holidays with the children. These keep the memories alive and make me smile every time I walk past. Photographs do not belong on memory cards. They only have currency once we print them or use them as wallpaper on our devices. Home is where one starts from. T.S. Eliot. Your bathroom. There is barely a woman alive whose pupils don't dilate at the words beautiful bathroom. It's often the first thing we check out in a hotel room, a newly renovated house, or a real estate viewing. Having a beautiful space in which to clean, relax, soak and recalibrate, not to mention pluck, brush, squeeze, poke and prod, is very important. The three most important elements of a bathroom for someone living alone are good lighting, a magnifying mirror, and a bath. Lighting and a magnifying mirror go together. There is no one else to point out your mascara panda eyes, or tell you your eyebrows need a hedge trimmer, or even that you look unwell. You have to see it and fix it, and to do that you need decent lighting and a good mirror. End of story. I had extra lights installed, including two heat lamps, and bought a magnifying mirror, a round one with an extending arm, just $15 at a storage shop. It's possibly the best $15 I've ever spent. Or buy a magnifying mirror with built-in light. Once you have one of those babies, there's no going back. Bath, bath, bath. Let me count the ways I love you. When I was growing up in England, showers barely existed and were considered quite exotic. So a bath is normal for me. In fact, it's a deal-breaker when renting or buying a home. No bath, no contract. And yes, of course you need a shower in the morning, but I have a bath almost every night, and it's got nothing to do with getting clean. It's a metaphor for renewal. I'm slightly embarrassed to admit that I even have a Pinterest board of beautiful baths, and have fantasized that in my parallel universe life, where money is no object, I'll do a tour of the world's best hotel baths. They all have views. Of the Taj Mahal from a bath in the Oberoi in Agra, to an aquarium from a bath in Dubai's Atlantis Hotel. But I digress. I know baths are not essential, but neither are candles and flowers and champagne and bitter dark chocolate. And on reflection, don't they go well together? When you live alone, your bathroom assumes an important role as your self-care hub, your spa, your treat, and your indulgence. What can you do to make the existing space more enticing? I just searched spa bathroom on Pinterest, and there were lots of great ideas, from how to hotelify your bathroom to how to turn your bathroom into a spa experience. A few small touches can make all the difference. Candles, nowhere near your hair, or flameless candles, some bubble bath. I still think Badadas can't be beaten, although I put it in after the bath has run. A luxurious bath mat, a bath pillow, a headband, a beautiful robe. I bought mine from a spa I visited. Goodies in baskets, a body brush, a natural sea sponge, some relaxing background music, and a stash of tiny bars of chocolate so that I can eat one in the bath. And yes, you'll need a back scratcher. I always have at least two towels on the go to guarantee a dry one, plus a few white ones folded in a pile, the quickest way to that luxury hotel look, and a black washcloth, so no makeup on those white towels. The one little thing that makes the biggest difference to the look and energy of the room is a little bunch of fresh flowers, or just a single bud. Give it a try. What should you keep in your medicine cabinet? Because you are your own first aider, make sure your bathroom cabinet is well stocked with everything you might need, including band-aids, headache pills, cough and cold medicine, throat lozenges, bandages, thermometer, antihistamine, antiseptic cream, Mozzie-bite ointment, hydrogen peroxide for splinters, sunscreen, tweezers, scissors, spare toothbrush, diarrhea and constipation pills, rehydration salts, cotton buds and tissues. Check the use-by dates regularly. If you're on medication, there are lots of apps that will help you manage them. Finally, don't get locked in. Make sure the handle and lock on your bathroom door is in good nick. A dodgy lock can mean you're trapped, even if you just shut the door without actually locking it. Trust me, I learned the hard way. Collect moments, not things. Author unknown. Practical upkeep. Happiness comes from being engaged in life, not acquiring and having more stuff. In other words, as has often been quipped, never cry over anything that can't cry over you. Clutter. I nurture a delusion that one day my house will be a clutter-free zone, but the chances are slimmer than Kate Moss. Nevertheless, I do my best to tame it on an ongoing basis, so that I am in control of it, not the other way round. If I don't clear it, no one else will. It is easy to subscribe to the notion that an uncluttered space allows you to breathe, in every sense of the word. Decluttering expert Peter Walsh puts it very well. Things that are left undone can be your own undoing. They just add stress and waste precious time. Organizing is the act of giving yourself more time and peace of mind. I agree, but even as I write, out of the corner of my eye, I can see papers and books creeping like triffids over every flat surface. Sometimes I feel like putting the whole lot in a dustbin and seeing if there are any repercussions. A friend said that when she moved from the UK to Australia, a little bit of her wished her container would fall off the ship so that she could start again with less stuff. I get that. So how to get motivated? I try to stick to the rule that when something comes into the house, something goes out. New things need to earn the right to be in your life. The artist and textile designer William Morris said, "Have nothing in your house that you do not know to be useful or believe to be beautiful." I have found the best way to attack clutter is to deal with a small bit at a time. 3 piles of papers or a couple of shelves, 30 minutes every day. I see myself as a character in The Great Escape, tunneling out the earth, clutter, bit by bit. Once a month I take a load to the charity shop. Home is a name, a word. It is a strong one, stronger than magician ever spoke or spirit ever answered to, in the strongest conjuration. Charles Dickens, Martin Chuzzlewit. Tidying and cleaning. Living alone offers freedom, but also calls for a level of self-discipline. If you leave your wet towel on the bathroom floor, it will lie there like a slug, unloved and unmoving, indefinitely. The best way to keep the place tidy is to pretend that someone, a friend, a real estate agent, is about to drop in, so it needs to be in good nick. The same goes for cleaning. I put aside a day a week when the house gets hoovered and jiffed, guest ready. Between times, the bathroom and kitchen floors get mopped and the loo's cleaned. Clean windows make a huge difference too. About once a year, I have the carpets and sofa steam cleaned and the house sprayed for insects. I was coy when I wrote that. By insects, I really mean cockroaches. And where I live in Sydney, you could put a saddle on them. Security. You must feel 100% secure in your home. Questions like, could someone break in at night or while I'm out? Or, will I be burgled? Are not your friends. If you are not confident about your security, get a locksmith to upgrade the locks on your main doors, plus add a peephole, door chain, window locks, and bars if necessary. Get a burglar alarm installed and use it. I have a lovely heavy old bolt on the front door that I clink shut every night, and it gives me extra reassurance. Put signs and stickers around the outside of the property, advising that you have a burglar alarm, and a dog if you have one. If you have precious jewelry, always hide it, and not in your sock drawer. You can buy small safes camouflaged as tins of food, books, or even electricity sockets. There are some good home security apps available that can do everything from monitoring home from your phone, to turning your home computer into a surveillance system, to switching your lights on and off while you are out. They are upgrading all the time, so check out what suits you. Other security hints include making it look as though more than one person lives at your place by having multiple pairs of shoes visible, including some men's, installing motion detector outdoor lights, never putting personal details on your keyring, and being careful who you give spare keys to. If you get your car washed or serviced, or extra keys cut, always detach them from the main set. Know your neighbors so that they can keep an eye out for you, especially if you're going away. Never order a taxi from your house if you're going to the airport. Give a different address nearby and wait there. Make sure you have a working torch and a supply of candles and matches, along with a fire blanket and a small fire extinguisher in the kitchen. Have fire alarms properly installed and check them regularly when the clocks change. Candles create a lovely atmosphere, but be very, very careful of them. If you light them at night and are alone, set an alarm to ensure that you don't fall asleep with them burning. Better still, try flameless candles. They're more and more lifelike. Do it yourself. Sometimes I feel like a human Swiss Army knife. She sews, she drills, she unblocks sinks, she hammers. She can take stones out of horses' hooves. The reality is that being alone means you have to step up and become adept at basic home maintenance. DIY takes on a whole new meaning when everything is bloody DIY. If you let things slide maintenance-wise, you will usually have a bigger and more expensive headache waiting for you down the track. Look after your home and it will look after you is the theory. I have always been quite good at electrical matters and can handle blackouts with aplomb. I have also taught myself to gurney the yard, plunge the loo, replace a washer on a leaking tap, drill a hole to hang a picture, fix the hot water system, clean the filters on the cooker hood and air conditioner, replace the seals on the fridge, clean the gutters, reboot the alarm system, replace the batteries in the smoke detectors, grout and paint bathroom tiles, kill cockroaches, pantry moths and even mice, fix the internet and descale the showerheads. Of course, there are some jobs I can't do by myself. Hang heavy pictures, anything involving climbing up a huge ladder, or move heavy furniture, although you can get slider gizmos. Use your common sense and err on the side of caution. I keep an ongoing list of jobs in a book in the kitchen, and when it gets long enough, I'll call in a handyman for half a day. And of course, I employ an expert for roofing, major electrical and plumbing work. I know my limitations. It's worth investing in good tools. The same goes for kitchen equipment. Forget about the patronizing downsized tool sets with patterned handles aimed at women. What were they thinking? You'll need a good size walloping claw hammer, tape measure, nails, screws, picture hanging hooks, super glue, a proper screwdriver with different heads, Phillips and normal, duct tape, masking tape, paint brushes, awl, selection of batteries, pliers, wrench, level, small saw, utility knife, plunger, drill, and upholstery stapler. Phew! I keep all my tools in one drawer. I also have an electricity drawer containing socket extensions, light bulbs, timer switches, plugs for different countries, leads, and so on. Takeaways. Your home has a disproportionate impact on your well-being. Articulate its energy and look at the space with new eyes. Find the desire paths in your home. Don't be afraid of color. Go through your home room by room and incorporate some of the ideas in this chapter, taking additional inspiration from the internet and magazines. Stay on top of practicalities such as clutter, tidying, cleaning, security, DIY, and maintenance. Make sure you love the space you're in. Chapter 8. Doing things by yourself. Traveling, Christmas, restaurants, cinema. Make the most of your time alone. Living alone is not an excuse to miss out on anything and everything you want to do, and the satisfaction of doing them is all the sweeter. It's a question of opening the door and making your own adventures. I'm still taken aback by how many of my non-solo friends have a simultaneously smug and morbid curiosity about how I manage to go on holiday, to a concert, a gallery, the movies, or, heaven forbid, to eat at a restaurant by myself. I could never do that, they murmur. Of course they could. The enormous elephant in the corner of the room is just the fear of awkwardness, embarrassment, being judged, labelled odd, lonely and friendless, or simply not enjoying it. Newsflash. No one cares. It is a well-known fact that 100% of humanity is 100% self-absorbed. Your fellow diners are thinking about how they hate the way their husband chews his food, or wishing they'd ordered what their friend ordered, or weighing up whether the carbonara is WTC, worth the calories, or thinking how noisy the restaurant is, or why Joe didn't text back, or they'd rather be at home watching Netflix. They're not wondering why you are sitting there alone. No one cares. People don't judge, draw conclusions, or speculate. They don't think about you at all. Or even if they do, so what? It's more and more common to see solos getting on with their lives. Life goes on. I love traveling, movies, and eating out. Plus, there are a couple of classes I have my eye on. Why should I miss out because I haven't got someone to go with? Your future is shaped by what you do today, tomorrow, and the next day. So make some plans, open your front door, and step out with your head held high. The things one experiences alone with oneself are very much stronger and purer. Eugène Delacroix. Just give it the flick. I catch myself saying it all the time. Just one ticket, please. A table just for one, please. Just one slice, please. Just. A diminishing word along with only, as in only one, please. Why do we apologize? Because we're not worth the trouble? We teach others how to treat us, and saying just sets people up to treat you differently. I tried to remove it from my lexicon. I am one, and one is enough. The first part of this chapter is about navigating events by yourself. The second is about how to make the most of your time alone. Part 1. Navigating events. By events, I mean holidays, cinema, eating out, Christmas, and long weekends. I try to balance my diary by booking in some dates in advance, a concert or play, a course, a holiday, and a weekend away with friends or by myself. They act like markers in the ground, some pegs to hang the year on and anticipate, while allowing plenty of time for impulsivity. Solo traveling, or glad you're not here. I am biased. Traveling has a special place in my heart. I love it, and, or is that but, it is also the ultimate test of how much you like yourself and how happy you really are being alone. Traveling by yourself is not always easy, but offers great rewards. You discover who you are when no one else is looking. Agatha Christie captured the spirit of travel beautifully. Your travel life has the aspect of a dream. It is something outside the normal, yet you are in it. It is peopled with characters you have never seen before and in all probability will never see again. It brings occasional homesickness and loneliness and pangs of longing. But you are like the Vikings who have gone into a world of adventure, and home is not home until you return. Spread your wings and fly. Most people you know won't get traveling alone, but I'm prepared to bet that most of them have never tried it. It pays to have a thick skin. Last year I was planning a trip to France and took language classes to polish up my schoolgirl français. When I revealed my plans, a fellow student chimed in, "But won't you be really lonely going to Paris by yourself, the city of love?" Thanks for that, sister. The mental riposte was, "If you can rustle me up a tall bloke who can spell, cheerfully eat his body weight in palourde farcie, stuffed clams, and gets irony, then I'll take him. If not, I'll be fine by myself, thank you very much." And so I was. Off I went to Paris, and Dubai, and Rome, and Normandy, and Noirmoutier, and I loved every second. Trust me, if you have doubts about traveling solo, cast them aside, spread your wings and fly. Traveling by myself has been a revelation. I have learned what I like and don't like. Roof terraces and crowds, respectively. My level of tolerance for average food, heat and queues, not high. And how to pace myself. Full on in the mornings, chillin' in the afternoons. I have a proclivity for markets, street food and dusty old stationery shops. I favour small cities and minor museums. I have also learned that I have pockets of strength, confidence, curiosity and resilience that I never knew. On the downside, your suspicions are correct. The travel industry is designed and rigged for couples and families. You will usually pay the same amount as a couple for a hotel room, a place on a tour or cruise, travel insurance and car hire. Seek out one of the increasing numbers of travel agents and tour operators who specialize in solo travelers and guarantee no single supplements. Time spent shopping around is always time well spent. Another natural concern when traveling alone is security. Of course the threat of random terrorism casts a long shadow, but I'm quite philosophical about that risk. Don't be a chicken and confine yourself to a resort. Branch out, but be sensible when choosing your destination, and always follow government travel advice. Do your homework about safety from Lonely Planet and other guides, travel blogs, etc. Avoid any rough parts of town. They're often around major train stations, and be vigilant at night. Common sense is your best guide, and always heed the advice of the locals. If you're really nervous, consider taking a basic self-defense course. At the risk of sounding like a stuck record, remember them, how you approach your trip will determine your level of enjoyment. If you are jittery and apprehensive, seeing your solo trip as a compromise, then that is exactly what it will be. If you view it as an exciting adventure where you get to hold the reins, observe, grow, meet interesting people, and experience new sensations, then that is exactly what will happen. We are lucky because traveling with yourself, rather than by yourself, has never been easier or more accepted. The stigma of traveling alone is dissolving in the face of the inexorable rise of confident solo travelers who are showing how it's done. A great resource is the Solo Traveler blog, with plenty of advice about different destinations and practical tips from fellow soloists. I would also thoroughly recommend their book, The Solo Traveler's Handbook. Time is a bird. It perches, then it flies. Author unknown. Before you leave, collect inspiration for possible destinations whenever you find it. I keep scrapbooks, one digital, one physical, of places I read or hear about that I'd like to go to one day. I also have a map of the world and circle places I want to visit. If you haven't traveled alone before and wonder what the experience will be like, why not first spend a weekend in another town or city not too far away? Then work up to your fantasy jaunts. Mine include a road trip visiting vintage fairs across the USA, a month living on the French island of Noirmoutier, and a round-the-world trip visiting friends wherever they may be. Or Italy might seduce me once again. If countries had a Tinder profile, I'd swipe right for Italy in a flash. I like to stretch the holiday vibe as long as possible, pre and post, and enjoy an extensive and meticulous research phase. I love comparing different countries, cities, travel and accommodation options, tourist attractions, restaurants, markets, shopping opportunities, and so on. There is nothing I enjoy more than an afternoon of cross-referencing TripAdvisor with blogs and other travel articles, weeding out the paid reviewers, and assessing any response to a negative review. The occasional bad review does not deter me, but an overly defensive or poorly judged reply from hotel management can. In a couple of cases, I have contacted a manager and got a great deal from them directly. The man who goes alone can start today, but he who travels with another must wait till that other is ready, and it may be a long time before they get off. Henry David Thoreau. To set the scene, I Google insider tips or local tips for my destination, read books and watch movies set there, and learn a sprinkling of the language. Even a few words can make a huge difference to the welcome you receive. I've been upgraded to nicer rooms, been told about hidden restaurants only known to locals, and even been invited to people's homes because I've fumbled my way through a few sentences with my dodgy accent. Have a look at busuu.com, duolingo.com, or rosettastone.eu for language courses, or find Fodor's free online Language for Travelers course, which has 150 keywords and phrases you can listen to and repeat. Save time and avoid the queues when you arrive by booking tickets for major attractions in advance. When it comes to tourist crowds, I'm with Jean-Paul Sartre. Hell is other people. Of course, some people prefer not to research at all and swear by winging it and taking advantage of serendipity. I think there's a happy medium. Prepare, research, book, then let yourself go with the flow and be flexible. I plan my holiday itineraries on a blank monthly calendar, filling each square with flight and accommodation details and daily activities. And those activities are blissfully up to me. You could base a whole holiday around an interest like cooking, snorkeling, photography, art, or hiking, or just dip in and out of those worlds for a day. Learn how to make pasta in Rome, join an architecture walk in Chicago, or fly a Kestrel in Dubai. The first thing to do is lock in your flights. Depending on the flexibility of your dates, you could wait for airline sales, sign up to their alerts, and get good deals by adding more stops. Check out routehappy.com, and if you're really, really into research, check out the in-flight meal reviews at inflightfeed.com. I like to have all my accommodation booked in advance, and even if you don't, you'll need at least the first night organized. Research hotels versus Airbnb and all the alternatives in between at your destination. Your choice of hotel and location are really critical when you're traveling alone, so spend time researching and make it as good as you can afford, although it's worth remembering that you will meet more people at hostel-type accommodation. Single supplements are the bane of the solo traveler's life, and we pretty much always pay as much as a couple. Occasionally, older hotels will have single rooms tucked away in their armpits, but they're still more than half the price of a double. Ho-hum. It's always worth asking politely if they'll consider reducing the price as you're alone, especially if it's off-season and the room wouldn't be occupied anyway. But don't bet the farm on it. Your holiday dates will obviously have an impact on the cost of your trip. Aim for shoulder periods between high and low seasons, when you'll still have the good weather and the tourist sites will be open, but with fewer crowds. High seasons are expensive, crowded, and coincide with school holidays. Bad, bad, bad. Low seasons are cheaper, but the weather can be dodgy. Having said that, I've had some of my happiest times in rural France in the middle of winter, when an out-of-season tourist is treated like an exotic bird that flew off course, or stalking round Venice in the winter fog, or skating the frozen canals with the locals of Amsterdam. A few practicalities. Make sure you have any injections you need, organise the best travel insurance you can afford, scan or photocopy the key page of your passport and the cards in your wallet, and leave them at home with another copy tucked into your suitcase. Buy a timer switch to turn the lights on and off at home while you're away. Redirect the mail and ask a neighbour to collect any flyers from your door so they don't stack up. Put a sticky label with your name, address, email address and phone number inside your suitcase so that it can be identified if it gets lost. Enter passport expiry dates in your diary to ensure you don't get caught out. I have a special travel wallet where I keep my passport, e-ticket, boarding passes and currency. I also make myself an easy currency converter on a small piece of card. €1 equals $1.50, €5 equals $7.30, etc., and pop it in my wallet. As for packing, I start writing a list in a notebook a couple of weeks before I go, and then gradually toss those things into my suitcase. This includes all the recharging cords I'll need and an electrical socket converter. Your sponge bag should contain anti-diarrhea and constipation pills to avoid the embarrassment of having to mime your condition at the non-English speaking chemist, headache pills, antiseptic cream, sun cream, anti-mozzie and mozzie bite cream, band-aids, plus any prescription medications you need. I write a list of tops, bottoms, undies, swimming costumes, 90s jewellery, shoes and so on, and in my head, I go through what goes with what and which activities I'll be doing. I tend to overpack, so I've now learned to take out the just-in-case pairs of trousers and shoes. Frankly, as you're alone, no one will notice if you're wearing the same thing every day. Leave room for shopping or take an empty, squashy bag, but keep an eye on your baggage allowance. If you go over, you're charged by the kilo, and it can get very expensive very quickly. In my hand luggage, I take audiobooks on my phone, a blissful, superfine merino wool scarf, my own version of a business-class toiletries bag, with eye mask, mini flannel, socks, hand sanitizer, mini deodorant, a sample of Jo Malone perfume and moisturizer, an empty water bottle to fill up the other side of customs, and a magazine or iPad.